I'm Maddie Orton, and you're listening to the Jersey Arts Podcast. Broadway icon Norm Lewis is known for a lot of things. Breaking barriers as the first African-American Phantom in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway, lending his stunning baritone to the roles of Sweeney Todd, Porgy, and Javert, playing Senator Edison Davis on the hit TV show Scandal. The list goes on and on. But you may not know that the Emmy, Grammy, Tony, and SAG Award nominee works just as hard behind the scenes as an activist and founding member of Black Theater United. On September 20th, Norm Lewis will sing at Mayo Performing Arts Center to kick off Mayo PAC's 30th season, so we grabbed the opportunity to chat with him about his upcoming concert, career highlights, Black Theater United, and one of his first ever professional gigs, which just so happened to be at Jersey's own Harrah's Atlantic City. Take a listen. Thank you so much for joining me, Norm Lewis. I'm a longtime fan of yours, and this is just such a privilege.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
So you'll be coming to Mayo PAC on September 20th for the theater's 30th annual opening night, and I cannot wait to talk about that. But first, I want to back up a little bit. This is not obviously your first show in New Jersey, but one of the first professional gigs you ever did, I think, was playing Protean in Forum at Harrah's in Atlantic City.
Yeah, we call them the proteins. It was my second job in New York. So what happened was I moved from Florida. I worked in advertising for a long time for a newspaper down in Orlando, and finally got into this world of theater. And my first gig was at the Candlewood Playhouse in Connecticut. But then I ended up auditioning for, get this, Nipsey Russell. I don't know if you know that. You might be too young for that. But
I do know that name.
Yeah. So for those people who don't know who Nipsey Russell is, he was the Tin Man in The Wiz, the movie with Diana Ross and Michael Jackson. So, but he had a life before that. He was a comedian who did a lot of game shows. He was also on a show called Car 54. So he had a history, and he was playing Pseudolus in this,
oh my gosh,
this New Jersey casino, Harrah's Casino version of the show. Now, the show is usually around 2.5 to 3 hours, but we condensed it down to 90 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Just because what they do, and actually they when Vegas ended up getting shows like that, they would make them 90 minutes long. So that way they can get people back out on the casino floor. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, that makes sense.
There was no like first act, second act. You just saw the show and you get out.
That makes sense. Yeah. Same reason there's no like clocks or anything.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So it was fun. I did it for about 6 months and yeah, I had my taste of Jersey. I was a Jerseyite for a while.
That sounds like a fun play. I mean, what do you do when you're like living in a casino and like working in a, is that a fun experience or is that just like very, I can't even imagine.
Well, for me, I mean, I was so excited. I was young. I mean, relatively young. I was older than a lot of people who had just moved to New York, but I was youngish. It's still in my 20s, like my late 20s. And I ended up working something I was excited about. I was doing a musical theater show, singing and dancing. And I was working with someone I admired, Nipsey Russell, who I'd known for a long time. But I was, you know, making decent money then. I didn't have any bills. They would feed you, so you could go in and you could eat any time of day at the casino. They put us up in this really beautiful townhouse community called Brigantine Island, which was not that far.
Oh, yeah. You know. That's great.
And so it was the good life for 6 months. I had a good time. Yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds like a dream.
Yeah, truly, truly.
So this was not, theater was not your first job. You started in marketing. I think we're all very grateful that you transitioned into theater. What made you go a different route initially, and how did you end up moving over?
I majored in business in college, and so I was working for the newspaper already while I was still in school. And then I moved from the production department. Basically, the production department is where you put the newspaper into the machine. It opens up, and then coupons or different sections of the newspaper fall in. So I did that for a while. Then I moved. There was a position in marketing that opened up, so I took that job. And then maybe 6 or so many months later, because I was someone who worked in the marketing department, I was close to the advertising department. So they said there's a position open for classified sales. So I went over there and did telephone sales and then moved up to like telemarketing and then ended up doing a little bit of outside sales before I quit and got into musical theater.
What made you decide to take the leap? Because that's kind of, it's a really scary leap to make, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I was always told that I had a nice voice. And then I ended up doing little gigs. Like I was, even though I was majoring in business in school, I was still in the choir and did a little bit of theater in college. And so I stayed close to it. After that, even working for my 9-to-5, I would do contests at night at different bars. And
oh,
I would sing
great.
Here, sing there. Sometimes you would win, sometimes you'd lose. But
what was your go-to song?
God, I ended up doing, I took two Stevie Wonder songs for Once in My Life. And what was the other one? Oh, Jesus, why can't I think of the other one? Oh my God. Oh, it'll come back to me in a minute.
Well, to be fair, you probably haven't had to audition in a long time. So that's, you know, I get that.
Right. But, you know, in fact, I got really into church hopping back in the day. So mm-hmm. that was back when a lot of the contemporary Christian music was very theatrical. And I started following people like Larnell Harris and a guy named Steve Green. But I used to love, just like Kristen Chenoweth would say, I loved this woman by the name of Sandy Patty.
Okay.
And Sandy Patty had this like this beautiful type Christian music, but it was really dramatic. So I even brought in to some of the bars, I sang some of her songs. She had a jazz one that was really cool. And there was another one that was cool. And I won a couple of contests with that song. So
that is so great.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the audience for that, but I love
it. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But it was the fact that I had some of my friends that would come from work, and then also people were drunk and they were like, you know, they were like, I guess I was a showman. So I kind of got them.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, anyway, that's a whole nother.
Love it. Did you grow up doing theater?
No. I didn't get into theater until later in life. I didn't know I could sing until I was 16. So,
oh my gosh, I can't imagine that.
So it was, you know, the journey of that. I'm sure a lot of people have heard this already, but I sang in church. And then when I got into high school, second part of my junior year, you had to have so many electives to graduate. So I said, oh, I sang in church. So let me just try this. I'll try to be in the choir in school. And it'll be an easy grade. I'll meet some girls. It'll be fun. And it turned out to be my aha moment because it was first time I'd ever really was surrounded by these voices that sounded so beautiful that singing classical music. I never sang classical music. I heard it, but I never sang it. And, you know, I grew up singing gospel or R&B, you know, in my household. So it was just my cathartic moment of like, oh, this is really something.
So what can people expect from your upcoming concert at Mayo Pac?
Ah, I guess my love of theater. You know, I entered into this industry by musical theater. My foray into it was actually in high school when I got like really into it. Someone suggested I go and check out a couple of albums, and one of them was The Wiz.
Oh, sure.
And so that definitely is the show and the musical that resonates with me so passionately because Stephanie Mills and Andre DeShields and you know, all that entire cast, you know, Hinton Battle, actually, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where you go, wow, I know this story just from the movie that preceded it, you know, with Judy Garland, but this is told in a way that I truly get, you know? So yeah, it's my journey through the musical theater world, but also other music that influenced me over the years.
That's great. Do you do a song from The Wiz?
I do.
Are we going to say what it is or we don't have to?
No, we could say, I mean, I usually do the song Home. Because
beautiful.
It just, you know, and I've actually put it on, now I sound like I sound like a salesman, but I put it on my second album, my Christmas album, even though it's not a Christmas song, it just felt right being on the album, you know.
I love that. I also, that album has, my kid listens to Mean Old Lion. That was one of his first musical theater songs.
Yeah.
He's only 4.5, but he has a lion towel that he wears when he gets out of the bathtub.
Right.
And the only way I can get him out of the bathtub is if we like dance and sing to Mean Old Lion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, one of your songs is another one of his first musical theater songs. Is I used to sing I'd Rather Be Sailing to him
from
A New Brain, which is a bit of a deep cut, but I think just like one of the most beautiful songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill Finn did a great job on that song. Yeah.
That's just a gorgeous, gorgeous song and almost completely kid appropriate. I changed a couple of lyrics.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But otherwise perfect.
Yes. Yes.
Just a few months back at the 2024 NAACP Theater Awards, you received a Lifetime Achievement Award, and you're also a founding member of Black Theater United. You've very notably broken barriers as the first person of color to play Phantom in Phantom of the Opera. What role does activism play in your life and your career?
Well, it's interesting that you bring all that up, because I think activism has always been a part of my life, whether I knew it or not, you know, and just by showing up in the room, I was given the greatest advice by someone who was a veteran who wasn't, you know, a person of color, but he was someone that said, just show up. Unless they specifically ask for blonde hair and blue eyes, just let them tell you no.
I love that.
So that was one thing, but, it became apparent, especially when I was, you know, either the only one or one of two or three that was in the room. It wasn't so much that I was actively being an activist, but I was just trying to be, you know, someone who was of equal stature and showing that and just gaining that respectability. The NAACP award was just totally out of left field. And I was very honored, because I think of myself still as that 20 something year old that moved to New York, you know, back in 1989. But yeah, I mean, people have come up to me over the years and have said things such as, oh, wow, you are the reason why I'm in theater, or I've really watched you and listened to you and, you know, emulated you and respected you. And so that means a lot. So I try to keep that sort of reputation. That's, for me, reputation is more important than talent. But then as far as Black Theater United, you know, that came about because of some horrible, I can't even say it, horrible circumstances in 2020. Obviously, we were in the pandemic, all the murders that were happening, and obviously the George Floyd thing. And a lot of people felt a certain way, especially a lot of young people of color or a lot of young Black people. They were looking to us to get answers, the people who were older. And then we were looking to the producers and the theater owners to say, okay, what do you have to say? Because these kids are saying, they're screaming. So we didn't want to point fingers in anyone's faces, but what we wanted to do is just those relationships that we have, create something special. And during the pandemic, what we did, it was LaChance and Audra McDonald who came together, brought us together on a Zoom, and we were on for hours, like at literally four or five hours, just trying to discuss things and see what we could do. And then we decided to form Black Theater United. We were trying to come up with the right name and all that stuff. And so that's what we did. And then over the next few months, we were trying to figure out a strategic plan. We hired someone to do that. We got donations and everything to do that. And then within, I would say, another 6 months, we were still under the pandemic, but then we were being let out a little bit. Like, I think that was 2021 when we were being let out with the onset of hopefully the vaccine and all that. But we stayed on Zoom and we created a summit. And we brought together theater owners, producers, creators, heads of unions, and we had a full-on discussion. We hired a facilitator who knows about DEI and who can bolster this conversation to get it started. And then we broke off in different rooms. And we said, listen, tell us exactly how you feel as someone who is not a person of color. What is it that you are seeing? What is it that you know, want to know? Ask us questions. And that's what we did. And we came back together into one unit and put together those notes. And we created what we call the New Deal. And the New Deal, you know, it's not the Constitution of the United States, but what it is, it's holding people accountable and making sure that voices are at the table. Now, there's been a lot of changes over the years as far as, you know, like you said, I was the first African-American to play Phantom on Broadway. But I had seen representation of Robert Guillaume, who was the first African-American to play it, but he was in Los Angeles.
Sure.
You know, LaChance saying out of all of her years of being on Broadway or in many theatrical pieces, she only, for the first time she had a Black director, it was back in 2021. And Charles Randolph Wright. So, you know, we not only are making strides on stage, you know, Hamilton actually would knock down so many doors and opportunities on stage is, I don't want to say it's great, but it's definitely progressing. But backstage is where we right. want to like introduce more directors, more choreographers, more stage managers, more people. You know, there's, I can count on one hand how many people are on the crew on a Broadway stage who are of color or black specifically. So we wanted to create something that would open those kinds of avenues, because there's a lot of people who are not necessarily, you know, singer, dancer or actors, but they love theater.
Sure.
We have partnered with a lot of the PR firms that are in town, with the management companies that are in town that deal with theatrical. And we now have interns, mentee situations. And we've put those people in. We've done it now for the past 3 years, and it's gone really well. In fact, I think three of our mentees have been hired in those capacities. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. And now we're getting ready to, Black Theater United is getting ready to start an educational program this fall. We're partnering up with another organization, and we want to start at the junior high level. We think that they're mature enough to kind of understand what this is all about.
Yeah.
And then hopefully lead on into high school and into college. Now, again, you don't have to sing, dance, or act, but if you love theater, there's other ways to be involved. And so that's what BTU is all about. We really want to be that. We call ourselves the NAACP of theater. And we want to just be a vessel for people to be able to come to. You know, there are other organizations that we really collaborate with, and that's Black Theater Coalition. Mm-hmm. There's a Broadway Advocacy Coalition. There's the Black Broadway Men. I think there's the Black Broadway Women. I might be saying that wrong, but there's other organizations. We're all saying the same thing. But, you know, everybody uses whatever tools or relationships that they have to make sure that we progress.
You played Phantom not once, but twice, actually, because you were also starring in Love Never Dies, which is the sequel to Phantom. You played so many iconic musical theater bucket list roles. And I just jotted down a couple. And I was like, I can't name all of them because it's going to take up half the podcast. But Harold Hill in Music Man, Cole House in Ragtime, Javert in Les Mis, Porgy and Bess, Sweeney Todd. And I could keep going. Who else is on your to-do list at this point?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I get this question a few times, and I will say there was, you know, when I was younger, I did have more of a list. You know, I wanted to play Curly in Oklahoma. I wanted to play, what's the character's name in Carousel? I forget his name. But in Nine, I wanted to be the lead guy in that.
Oh, yeah. That's a great
one. Now that I'm older, I mean, I have to be realistic on what my at least in that regard. But yeah, you know, I'm actually a little bit more excited about the new works that's coming out. There's a lot of people that are like Douglas Lyons, who is mm-hmm. just killing it. You know, he wrote Chicken and Biscuits and a few other pieces. I want to see what's new out there. You know, I love the old stuff, and I think there's a place for it. But you know, right now I'm kind of excited about the new things, the new works.
Yeah, that's great. Do you, looking back on the roles that you have done so far, are there any that are like your absolute favorite that might be surprising to people, or some that people would say like that makes them, I mean, you know, I would imagine playing Phantom is one of the greatest experiences of all time.
Yes, yes. And actually one of the hardest, one of the most challenging, I would say too. I mean, I was up for the challenge, but it was definitely the most challenging because of the fact that I'm not a tenor. Usually they hire tenors. I'm a baritone.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so you had to sound there was a sound that people expected. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Because the music is so lush and your voice is one of the instruments that is in that show. So I couldn't sound like Michael Crawford, but I could do the best that I could to sound like what I thought the Phantom was. And so it was a nice challenge that lasted for a while. I would say I'm known for Phantom. I'm known for Javert. I'm known for Sweeney Todd, Porgy and Bess, you know, obviously for that as well. But there's a show that I did back in 1998 that was called 1998 or 99, doesn't matter, but it was called Captain's Courageous. It was off Broadway with MTC. It was with Treat Williams, God rest his soul. He's no longer with us, but he was the lead. And I was one of this, it was a group of guys. Just guys. It was a fraternity. And we were portraying, I don't know if you ever saw the movie with Mickey Rooney or read the book, but it was about these guys that were on a fishing boat and out of Gloucester, Massachusetts. And what we did was we used the book, The Perfect Storm, as our Bible, even though it was more, because that was our storytelling was back before the Depression. The Perfect Storm was a little bit more modern. I think it was like in the 80s or 90s or something. But we used that as reference. And I was trying to figure out my character because I was the only black guy in the show. And I was the cook on the ship. So this Gloucester, Massachusetts accent, they were trying to get us into that sort of vein. Something felt wrong about it for me.
Okay.
But I said, okay, I'll still learn it. But going deeper and digging deeper into my character, I found out that these ships would go down to the Caribbean and fish and then hire people from the Caribbean to be on these boats or be in that community. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's it. That's my character. So I said I was from Trinidad and I put on a Trinidadian accent and I actually only had 4 lines in the show.
Huh.
But for me, saying those 4 lines in that accent was more authentic and my subtext actually helped my character more. You know, I had 1 lines here and there, but I would say it in that accent.
Yeah.
Instead of a Gloucester, Massachusetts accent. So it's all about, you know, just trying to find the depths of what is authentic for you as a character. And, you know, and even when I played the Phantom, it was funny because, yes, the show had been on at that time 24 years. And there was no way I was going to go in there and change anything. It was just, this guy. That's, yeah. You know, my skin color is different than most of the guys that have played the role. That's the only difference.
Right.
But when I was learning the show, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to stand here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. But then when Harold Prince, we got to the last scene and he said, Norm, okay, this is what I want you to do.
Wait, Hal Prince came back to put you into the show?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Does that always happen with replacements?
Well, not really. So what he did was he had the assistant, or I don't want to say the assistant, but he was the guy that was a resident director. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. His name was Seth Sklar. I always have to say it slowly because it's such a tongue twister. Seth Sklar. Anyway, he was wonderful. He really took us on the journey because he'd been working so closely with Harold Prince. But the final few days before I went in, Harold came in and directed me. And so he's like, look, in this final scene, I want you to be this petulant child. I just want you to go as far as you want. Like, it's my ball and I'm taking it and I'm going home. That's the thing. He said, I'll let you know if you go too far.
Oh, I love that.
That was, at least he gave me the freedom for in that part of the show. So I took advantage of it and I did a lot of crazy things. And I was just in fear of him saying, okay, that's too far. That's too far. He came to see it several times and he was like, no, you're good.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool. I think of you primarily as like a classical musical theater person, but I did also, you know, I didn't realize how much rock opera you'd done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've done, which I was like, oh, wow. I think of such a classical, beautiful baritone. And I'm like, oh, he's done Tommy twice.
Well, I did. We did a concert version of it like years later. We did it like the 15th anniversary or something like that, 20th anniversary. But yeah, I did. You know, that was my first Broadway show. If you listen to
the album, and Jesus Christ Superstar on TV.
Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I got to do that.
How do you feel about that genre versus, I mean, the stuff that you're more known for?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I never, funny enough. Okay, so Tommy, I was lucky just to get that show. So they were on the very last day of their callbacks and I got in because I was on a tour of Once on This Island and I got in somehow, luckily, and they hired me. I was like, oh my God. So that was great. But if you listen to the album, my voice, I think, sticks out more than anyone else's because if you listen to Go to the Mirror,
okay,
I had to sing it in a way that sounded a little bit more Broadway, even though it had a rock beat underneath it. So I had like that legit sound that, you know, quote unquote classical sound, if you will. But there was that rock beat underneath it. And then in Jesus Christ Superstar, which I never thought that I would be part of that.
Which was great, by the way.
Well, it was so much fun. But they put me as Caiaphas. And Caiaphas has that, you know, that low sound, you know. He's singing there. And then he has to sing a little higher So I guess, you know, the range that I could do, they were like, okay, this guy could do this role right now. I've always wanted to play Judas, but I could never do eight shows a week.
I don't know how anybody does eight shows a week with that song.
Yeah. No. Yeah, there's no way.
It can't be good.
I could do it one day. I could do one night.
Well, I want to see you do it. If there's a one night only concert version, I would love to see that.
Yes. I could give myself one night, and I could definitely try to be as authentic as possible. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, if anybody listening wants to do a one night only production of JCS starring Norm Lewis, I am so there for it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
It. I cannot wait to see you at Mayo Pack. I'm sure people will be thrilled. And I cannot wait to see what you do next, because it's always such a pleasure.
Norm Lewis will perform at Mayo Pack on Friday, September 20th. For more information, visit mayoarts.org. If you liked this episode, be sure to give us a review, subscribe, and tell your friends. A transcript of this podcast, as well as links to related content and more about the arts in New Jersey, can be found on jerseyarts.com. The Jersey Arts Podcast is presented by Art Pride New Jersey, advancing a state of creativity since 1986. The show is co-founded by and currently supported by funds from the New Jersey State Council on the Arts, with additional support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This episode was hosted, produced, and edited by yours truly, Maddie Orton. Executive producers are Jim Atkinson and Isaac Serna Diaz. Special thanks to Norm Lewis and Nick Kaminsky. I'm Maddie Orton for the Jersey Arts Podcast. Thanks for listening.